We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Good afternoon. This is Christine Fox with CETA. I am CETA's Deputy Executive Director, and I'm pleased to join you today to talk a bit about the homework gap, closing the homework gap, that is, and the equity of access for students outside of school. As CETA's Executive Director, I am responsible for many aspects within CETA's organization, and one of those is our content development. And so the cover you see here, the Broadband Imperative 2 Equitable Access for Learning, is a project that I worked on over about a year and of time that we published in September 2016. I'm happy to have here today practitioners, folks that work in the field, including Rhonda Schroeder from Oklahoma. And she is going to share information about her one-to-one access elementary school in Oklahoma City. As well as that, we have Barbara Nesbitt, and she is from South Carolina, along with Principal Mike Corey. And they will be sharing details about their particular program as well. And so we look forward to the discussions. We encourage you to use the chat so that we can engage with all of you and make sure we're highlighting the areas of importance. And finally, I would like to thank AT&T. AT&T is an important partner of CETA's, as well as the sponsor of this particular webinar. So a little bit about CETA. We are a 15-year-old nonprofit. We support state digital learning leaders, including those at the State Department of Education level. We also work closely oftentimes with folks from state networks, as well as the state CIO side, and those digital learning leaders from departments of education, regardless of their offices. So we work with folks from digital learning, ed tech, professional learning, special education, assessment as well. We are a forum for these state level leaders to advocate for policy and practice that supports digital learning opportunities. We are the professional learning organization for those state leaders focused on ed tech. And then we do provide the opportunity for those state leaders to interact with one another, as well as with the private sector. CETA has had a track record for advocating for digital learning. We have published multiple resources around both broadband, digital learning, as well as digital instructional materials. And here is a list of some of those resources. We will be posting direct links in the chat to those resources as well. The work that we're going to talk about today actually was developed as a co-paper with the state K-12 broadband leadership that we published in 2016, actually right around this time last year. And then previous to that, we published Navigating the Shift in 2015, talking about digital instructional materials. We have an online portal, dmaps.ceta.org, where we host state policies and practices around instructional materials. And most recently in February, we published the Guide to Quality Instructional Materials as well. All of CETA's resources are openly licensed. They are also available at no cost on our website. So a little bit about this particular work. In October, actually, of 2015, CETA connected in person at our event, and we worked with our members to talk about broadband specifically in schools. We had published a broadband imperative in 2012. That work was adopted by the FCC as part of the E-rate modernization order, and the group felt that it was time to provide a refresh of that resource. And so we began working and drafting and writing. Last spring, we published the state K-12 leadership around broadband, and then in September, we published the Broadband Imperative 2. Apart from CETA members themselves, we work directly with state network leads, leaders from the private sector, as well as various organizations within the ed tech framework so that we could support our work, include as many resources as possible with both internal and external reviewers. Just a little bit about the state K-12 broadband leadership. This highlights the importance for states to support and develop leadership opportunities so that all students have access to broadband, including high-speed broadband, and the fact that state leaders can help drive those decisions and support local education agencies. And we were able to highlight in this report multiple groups that in different aspects of supporting broadband throughout states. Different states approach things differently. Clearly, there are geography as well as policy parameters that have made states very unique in how they approach supporting broadband throughout the state. One thing that is critical to our membership specifically is whenever CETA is publishing, we really talk about not the technology and the tools, but the importance of shifting learning models and how teaching and learning should be personal, provide deep understanding of the content, and that there should be hands-on tools. So this isn't about shifting to digital so that we have a PDF version of a textbook or we're doing worksheets on an iPad, but really more about the opportunity for students to be content creators, for teachers to be able to personalize instruction along with their students and families, and the ability to have online collaboration. And so throughout the Broadband Imperative 2, we highlight examples of that shift in learning models and changing in teaching and learning. The Broadband Imperative 2 has four primary recommendations. The first is around infrastructure and increasing capacity targets. So there are specific targets for schools and districts to have as far as internal and external connections to broadband. The second is around designing infrastructure to meet these capacity targets. We talk about smart planning, working with both communities and schools, planning for the future, looking at the size of your school or district and how especially those very large or very small or rural districts may have various considerations. The third recommendation is around our topic of today, ensuring equity of access for all students outside of school. And then finally, our last recommendation is to leverage state resources to increase that broadband access. Specific to our discussions today and the examples that you'll hear in a bit, recommendation 3, ensure equity of access for all students outside of school, really focuses on the homework gap. And having said that, we have 3 primary areas that we highlighted during this paper. The first is to deliver outreach. The importance of families and communities understanding the shift to digital learning and the fact that those families need to understand the why before we could get to the what is really critical. In addition, we encourage schools and districts to leverage community partnerships for outside of school access. We know you cannot do this alone, and therefore we encourage you to work with organizations within your community. And then finally, there are multiple options for low-cost or no-cost out-of-school access for families in need, and we do highlight some of those as well. As many of you are aware, the problem is that most students are now required in some way, shape, or form to access internet resources outside of school. And because of that and the importance of quality instructional materials, being able to collaborate online, we need to have consistent quality connections. So it may not be enough for students to be able to access simply through a phone or a smaller portable device. One issue may be that families have access at home, but they don't have the broadband in order for their students to leverage online video resources or participate in online courses. And then finally, the importance of safe and consistent access. When you think about students, yes, there is Wi-Fi in many places within the community, even coffee shops or fast food restaurants, some of which is being scaled back as some of these locales offer Wi-Fi services, but they want to limit the amount of time that's available to customers because they want new customers and more people to be able to access their places of business. So that's one issue. And then the other issue is a safety concern, right? A group of freshmen or sophomore high school students perhaps should not be at a fast food restaurant in inner city at, you know, 9 o'clock at night when it's dark and they need to be get home safely. So we really advocate for the need to support access within a safe environment and to have a consistent and high speed access that's seamless so that students are not worried if they can get their work completed in a timely fashion. As I go back just for a moment to these three sections of the recommendation, I do want to highlight the fact that CETA understands and the national leaders that participate in this work understand that every school and community is different. And our goal really here is to say that states, districts, and schools should provide guidance and leadership in this area. We're not here to say that they need to provide access to every individual student or family, but they need to show leadership in this area so that families understand the need, they understand where they may be able to gain access, and the teachers are communicating effectively as well. And so we understand that budgets are limited, many are being slashed, and there are issues around that too. But this is where I think some of the examples show creativity, flexibility, and forward thinking on how to provide students both the devices and access in and outside of school so that they have seamless learning environments. Specific to outreach, we encourage that schools and districts have some type of communication campaign. You work in school meetings with the PTA, with community events, and via social media to really share the power of the shift in learning models, to share the changes in learning opportunities. You know, there are naysayers, parents or grandparents or relatives. Well, I learned, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic, just good old fashioned paper and pencil. And we understand that, but we also know that there isn't a job today, whether, you know, working at a big box store or fast food, where you even apply, you have to be able to apply online to do that. And so from simple working within minimum wage jobs, you need to be able to leverage technology tools and resources, all the way to folks that are creating films or performing surgeries or engineers. There is a need and a really a requirement in colleges and careers to be able to leverage digital learning. And this is really the wave. It's not the wave of the future. It's the reality of now. And this is how we're best preparing our students for those college and careers. There are multiple resources that are cited in this paper that include the opportunity to leverage relationships with families. So I'm not going to rattle all of these off, but my colleagues will post the links in the chat, and you at a school or district level or the teacher level may decide to leverage some of these resources so that your families are as aware as possible of the shift to digital and the why and the how. We strongly encourage community partnerships. One of the strongest typically in communities partnership is with the libraries and librarians. And this is a place where oftentimes, whether it's schools and the community and the library leveraging the same network and or providing opportunities for students outside of the school day to work within the library to access content. Community centers and municipalities often have opportunities for schools to collaborate. There are, especially in rural areas, potentially mobile community hotspots. And then finally, even your local chamber of commerce may be interested in supporting out-of-school access. We would encourage you to share options of how families may access discounted rates for broadband. There are some listed in the paper, so this is a chart of examples. And we'll also post these in the chat. This is not a finite list. This is some highlights of ways that families may have broadband access at home or mobile access for their families. And just a couple of quick exemplars before we dig into our presenters today. Another South Carolina example is a Richland school district too. And within this district, that district connected with, it actually was a small number of families, but they were students, new immigrants to this country that had no access at home, and they worked to provide mobile hotspots. So the students took those with them. Then you may have heard in Coachella Valley Unified, they have Wi-Fi access on the bus, and then they actually parked these buses throughout the community to provide mobile hotspot areas throughout the community for nights and weekends. And in Bloomington, Illinois, the district worked as well to provide access at home, and they restructured their instructional materials funding. And so they thought it was important to provide hotspots to students as part of that particular funding stream as well. And there is a detailed review of these exemplars as well as multiple others within the Broadband Imperative 2. So I would encourage you to actually look at that, and you may leverage that and ideas from them on how to provide your students access at home. So now we're going to hear from the field. I'm going to introduce Rhonda Schroeder. She's a principal at Arthur Elementary in Oklahoma City Public Schools. And that is a very large school district, the largest in Oklahoma, a very diverse area. And she has actually led the first one-to-one program with her students, focused on the opportunity for personalized learning opportunities. And Rhonda has her doctorate in educational administration from California Coast University, and she is an administrator there in Oklahoma City. And so without further ado, I'm going to turn the conversation over to Rhonda and let her share the highlights of Arthur Elementary.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I hear a little bit of an echo. Do you all hear the same echo, or are we pretty good? We'll keep going. We'll roll with it. So thank you for having me on today. It's an exciting time for Arthur Elementary, and we're always excited to share our story and get the word out there about the power of technology and leveraging that technology for personalized learning. So what we have discovered in our journey, basically, is that one size does not fit all. And in public education, we know that we have created some barriers and structures and trying to fit everybody in this one little capsule of learning, and have found that there are much, much better ways to accomplish what we need to do. So our focus at Arthur is on just that, finding as many ways as possible to provide a personalized and blended learning environment that all children can benefit from. And as Christine had mentioned earlier, for our demographics and honestly, our demographics and our socioeconomic status is part of what creates some of the barriers we have. We are a 100% free and reduced lunch program, which means all of our students are considered low socioeconomic students. We're about an 89% minority, close to 630 students in our school building, and the majority of those students are English language learners. And then we have a moderate mobility rate of 35%, which also impacts some of our issues with barrier to equity and access of technology. So our journey began in Arthur way, way back in about 2014, where we were a recipient of a generous grant that enabled us to start planning for a very robust one-to-one program at an elementary school. So in 2014, prior to starting our journey, our technology landscape looked rather dismal. It may look what some other schools in your areas look like. We had 1 to 2 desktop computers in each classroom, and then we had a computer lab that had 25 to 30 computers in the classroom. But mind you, our class size were sometimes well over 30 students. So even then, we could not quite guarantee that there was equitable access to technology for our students. And then, of course, with that limited access, our students and staff were pretty limited to access to curriculum and content during the school day. And so how we would maybe describe that is kind of a 2x4x6 analogy, where you're limited to the two covers of a book, and the four walls of a room, and the 6 hours of the day. And what we have found in student achievement at that time is it just simply was not enough. We could not get enough content and time into the kids' hands and be successful with the exponential growth needed in education. So we set out for some very, very ambitious goals, actually, with a very ambitious vision for learning at Arthur Elementary, and set out for the venture of where we are now. So before we get to some of that, I'll give you the kind of the now picture where we are 3 years later. We do have one-to-one iPad device for each child in pre-K through fifth grade. What's not noted on the slide is our teachers also have the same iPad, and they also have laptops, a very robust Wi-Fi system, and all the other bells and whistles of technology that a classroom with digital age practices would need. Our iPads do come with the 5G cellular service each month for our students, so that's an access equalizer for them. And then we just recently started the take-home privileges for our students back in 2016, and that's really where we have seen quite a bit of student growth because of that part of the initiative. So when we started in 2014, we actually started our planning in 2014. We did not actually roll out devices and access and change that landscape until October 2015. So we had about just a little over a year of very intensive strategic planning, because we wanted to make sure that we had all of the community outreach, the community partners, and all of those details worked out before we actually put devices into the hands of students. And so we started our journey with this very ambitious goal, a vision statement, a one-to-one learning environment would provide a personalized learning experience for each student, ensuring our vision, our school vision is accomplished. Arthur Elementary will build a 21st century learning environment that promotes collaboration, critical thinking, problem solving, creativity, and innovation. And we will accomplish this with the whole child approach, where each child is safe, healthy, supported, engaged, and challenged. It is a mouthful, but I can say wholeheartedly that our teachers and our staff and our community has embraced it. And this really truly does guide all of the decisions instructionally for our students. And so some of the goals and opportunities of our one-to-one program really worked around improving teaching and learning through enhanced pedagogical practices, and then improve student engagement through personalized learning. And through that process, we learned that the rigor of academic environment we were providing at that time was not sufficient for our students to be successful. And so we needed to work out some strategies and opportunities to really close that gap, and closing that homework gap particularly, which really opened our eyes to what can we do with providing 24/7 access to our content and curriculum for our students. So we started working with even more community partners. And I think one of the most successful community partnerships that we've seen so far, it's not specific to Arthur, it's actually open to our whole school district, but we did benefit from it. And it's the One Card Initiative through the Metropolitan Library System. And the One Card Initiative actually provides access to all of the local library services by just using their Oklahoma City Public School ID card number. And so that has been one of the access barriers removed, and providing that service and that opportunity for our families. And then, of course, we partner with some of our local churches and restaurants and businesses in the area that do offer free Wi-Fi as well. So if students have used all of their 5G cell service, or they've run over a little bit, there are plenty of other opportunities in the community for them to access the broadband services needed to access the curriculum. And so the next slide that we have here, I can't really talk about access and equity without talking about what it has done for achievement. And you know, many times we start an initiative or a transformation model, and it's years down the road before you can see the actual tangible benefit in student achievement. And so monitoring our data and our student achievement in real time and for our students is critical for us to keep monitoring our equity and access progress for our families. So on this slide, we'll take a look at the top set of data and where it says students by grade level of material. Now, this is a reading program that we're using in which students access during the school day, but they also have full access at home on the weekends, summer, spring break, you name it. And the data that you're seeing here actually starts from September, so this school year. So in September, we had 61% of our students working below grade level material in this reading software program. And as of last week, the May 10th, you can look at the growth there, and we actually have, it's actually lower now, but 17%, only 17% of our student body working below grade level, and even more remarkably, 48% of them at above grade level material with this particular reading program. And so that is one of the metrics that we use to see how's our access working for students. Are we making gains because of the additional access that we're providing to students and how that's working? And then the set of data just below that, the light blue, 52,000 lessons. This is a math program that we're using. Again, students can access it from home on the weekend, spring break, summer break, at any time. And if you kind of compare that to standard math lessons in a classroom, 175 instructional days, everybody getting the same math lesson, a school might benefit from 8,000 lessons a year for students. So seeing 52,000 completed and passed lessons for students that we are certain is due to the access barrier being eliminated to digital content and curriculum is just an astounding opportunity for us. So that's part of how we measure our access and how it's working for us. I do see a few questions coming up here on the side. So if you give me just a minute, I'll pop over those and answer those for a second. I think, let's see if I can go back here. Someone's asking about who's providing the 5G data each month and how much does it cost? It was actually provided through a grant provider from a local cable provider. So there was not a cost to our school directly. I do know there are several local providers in our area that do provide low-cost services for wireless and internet. There are also some schools in the area that have partnered with other companies that can do hotspot type of connection activities. So that might be an option to look into. I don't see if there's any other questions there. All right.
Thanks, Rhonda. And I think there might be a couple about your math curriculum. Maybe you can reply in the chat.
Sure, no problem.
And then we'll have a couple of questions at the end as well.
Okay, no problem. Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. So we appreciate Rhonda, and it's exciting to see the reality and the results that they have there after all that hard work. And it sounds like a lot of prepping and planning before, which we all believe is critical. The device is probably secondary to the preparing and shifting of the learning model and the content. So, all right, we'll have Rhonda back on at the end to answer more questions. And there might be some logistics questions that you can handle in the chat. And at this moment, we're going to click on another poll just to kind of hear a little bit more from all of you while our next set of presenters are logging on back with their camera. So for those of you on the phone, we're asking about the percentage of students in your district that have seamless, robust broadband access for a dynamic digital learning experience outside of school. And the choices are anywhere from 10 to 25%, 26 to 49, 50 to 74, and 75 to 100%. And then some of you may not be sure. It looks like from the discussions in the chat, many of you are not one-to-one, but you are mostly potentially paper with some digital learning opportunities. So you might not be as aware of availability in and outside of school. Looks like a lot of the folks that are voting right now are in that space where you're just not sure of the numbers. There are kind of varies in between to say that a small percentage believe that 75 to 100% have this type of robust, consistent access, and then the numbers are higher on the lower end. So be interesting to see, you know, how these things shift over time as we work on this area. So I'm going to stop the voting and close the poll. And I am excited to introduce from a different section of the country, Barbara Nisbet and Michael Corey from South Carolina. They are from the Pickens County School District. And Barbara is the Executive Director of Technology there. She is also a visiting professor at Clemson University School of Educational Leadership. And she is on the executive board of IMS Global, which is a nonprofit that focuses on interoperability tools and resources and standards to help all of these things that we've been talking about kind of work and talk to one another. And then Dr. Michael Corey is the principal of one of Pickens County's schools. He's the principal of Richard Geddes Middle in Eastley, South Carolina. And he is an educator that is excited to have launched the pilot of the first school in their district to have a bring your own device initiative. So that was brave, I would say, to take that on. But apart from the ed tech side of things, this is also the first FIT school, and they are a STEAM school. And so they have a lot going on at Geddes Middle School. And without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to this team to share about the exciting things going on in South Carolina.
All right, thank you. I'm Barbara Nisbet, and I'm going to start first and really just introduce Mike Corey and some of the great work that he's doing. But just to set a little bit of the background, our district started 4 years ago as a BYOD district, K-12, and we had all of our teachers do quite a bit of training around BYOD, and really it was successful, you know, as far as BYOD can be successful. But we were really, really wanting to get to a one-to-one program because we saw kids that really just every child didn't have a device to bring to school. Some of the devices were very old. You know, some kids had better quality devices, some had internet access at home, and some didn't. So last year, we were able in our district at ninth grade to have one-to-one with Chromebooks. This year, we expanded that to grades 8 through 12, but we were really excited at our middle schools in grades 6 and 7 for all of our middle schoolers through a national grant that we were awarded to receive a tablet with 5 gigs of 4G broadband access at home. And then next year, through a different grant, all of our eighth graders will have a hotspot with the same connectivity. So this has really been a game changer for our middle schools. And as we really were selecting where do we want to put the 4G connectivity, all of our kids really would benefit from this. We really believed as a district leadership team that our middle school was the place to put this, that that's where we were tending to see the biggest loss academically and in social engagement going from elementary school into middle school. And Dr. Corey has just been a phenomenal partner with my team and always helping us with BYOD and piloting things. But he and his teachers have done some phenomenal work with the tablets especially and the Chromebooks at home, but especially with the 4G connectivity. And he's really wanted to share some of those results. And then at the end, we'll both be willing to take questions as well. Dr. Corey.
Thank you, Dr. Nisbet, and greetings to everyone out there. I would like to take this opportunity to encourage all of the technology leaders in your district and state. I appreciate Dr. Nesbitt leading and proving that you can do a lot of things when there's a lot of distractors out there that are quick to point out what you can't do when it comes to these initiatives. Thank you, Dr. Nesbitt, for your leadership. As principal of Geddes Middle School in Easley, South Carolina, we are in the school district of Pickens County, where we serve over 16,000 students. If you are familiar with Clemson University, that is the location that we are at in South Carolina, right below the mountains. At our middle school, we serve over 1,250 middle school students in grades 6 through 8. Our population is 57% free and reduced lunch and 15% minority students in our community. We are in a rural community, which also creates some of those barriers that were mentioned earlier. A few items that really I would like to speak to that have been a game changer for us, not just all the transformation that occurs inside the classroom, but I will like to focus on what we have unearthed outside of the classroom since this initiative launched in November, just this school year. One of the first areas was in the area of research. As we all move to students researching and becoming researchers, one area that really changed is just the fact that previously with libraries, you were limited to their hours. And in rural communities like ours, you were limited to transportation. And oftentimes that was barriers to that library access and materials. With the home access that our students have had with our tablets, they can do that research online through our state online library, DISCUS. And that has really proved to change things that I'll talk about a little bit more later. And also accessing tools that are already free and available, such as Google and Google Drive. A few items that when it comes to homework and this homework gap that we all are trying to address as we encounter in our schools and classrooms. When you think of homework, I notice a few in the chat room, you have commented on the struggle of homework and facing that every day. I would encourage you to rethink what homework can become in this type of digital platform, especially with home access that can be achieved. Traditionally, we have relied on homework from 100% responsibility being on the student and the parent. And that may oftentimes be an absent parent. Really 0% intervention, collaboration or communication from a teacher beyond the school day. And sometimes, if we're honest, limited participation by the students. And even from a middle school principal's perspective, oftentimes the big mystery of will it ever be returned or make its way back to us after we've assigned it. So that is homework as we have known it. And that has really changed as we face those struggles. That was answered with some of this home access. So now what homework looks like is students accessing our learner management system, Schoology, Google sharing, papers are not getting lost. So really a homework assignment is done with a student. It is uploaded and the teacher is receiving that automatically and often in real time, even commenting on it. Or even if a student needs assistance with homework, teachers are available to even collaborate after hours and comment right then and there, right on the actual documents. And that learning management system is really key because you could also house other digital content and other things and resources there for students that are applicable to that homework assignment that evening. I can tell you that teachers when I surveyed our teachers, they have been reporting higher participation rates as they've rethought this homework because they do have that internet access. They can use our digital textbooks. So, you know, just again, from the middle school perspective, the burden oftentimes of carrying all these books home and lugging them home in that big backpack, that burden is removed. And I think that also impacts their participation rate. Also, like some of you have commented in the chat room about flipped classrooms, teachers can maximize their time now in the classroom because they can quickly adjust on the fly what is given for homework based on what the students were learning for that day. And also supporting students. In this venue, and teachers can truly support students through our learning management system and collaboration with them. And they can dialogue with students during that homework session, which was unthought of before. I wanted to also provide some information here also from our media specialist, Ms. Christina Connell, has done an amazing job aligning resources as this initiative is launched. So if your school or district is heading in this direction, I would encourage you to partner up with your media specialist at your schools and really start reviewing some of these resources, and some of these can be provided before your initiative is even launched. And we have some of that data here. Now, as we think of the important areas of English and reading, now you have access 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that is really changing things. One of those areas we have noticed is student empowerment. So much previously was just directed by the teacher and 100% owned by the teacher. That is now opening up, and students are being empowered through Destiny Discovery app, where students can read. They can read online, they can read offline, and they have learned how to place books on hold themselves for the library. They can make their reservations for different books that they're really interested in. And oftentimes we will have new arrivals, and we actually have to slow down our processes with those new arrivals, because if it shows up online, they are already holding it and requesting it. And we may not even have that one prepared yet for distribution. They're jumping on it so quickly. If you look at our statistics on ebook usage, I wanted to provide that for some of you as you collaborate with your media centers. If you look through these 3 years that Dr. Nesbitt speaks about in our transition to one-to-one, in 2014 and 15, we had about 180 ebook checkouts. Ebooks are a great tool to use and resource as you expand into this area. And we start off with 180 ebook checkouts in 2014 and 15. The following year, with the BYOD initiative, that increased to 1,200. And then you look at this current school year, 2016 and 17, we've had over 4,966 so far after our one-to-one device initiative has launched, and they have home access to read online and offline and all hours of the day. Also, when you think of the usage from home and that research, before we were limited to whatever you had in print. If there's any principals out there, you probably fear the analysis you do on your media center and how current your library collection may be, depending on resources and budgets that you have been provided. And now that is changing. We're not limited to what we have in print here in Easley, South Carolina, at Geddes Middle School. We can access things all over. And through the wealth of information like Discus, our access to information is literally at all the students' fingertips, with tens of thousands of books and primary source materials that are really available to them continually. One of the areas I also want to address that we are experiencing is really the leveling of the playing field, whether it's ESOL and language barriers that you can convert resources into different languages that are available digitally. Some in the chat room you've mentioned about different Lexile levels and how you can utilize that resource. When you think of the students now, that playing field is being leveled through home access. So now sometimes you're not limited by your location or your income level. Teachers really are using tablets and Chromebooks to integrate content literacy into their classrooms. So that is a very easy way to provide the background knowledge and provide a wealth of information if you have students that have limited background knowledge that is essential to their learning, especially in the area of literacy. Students are empowered. I've spoken about that and what they are then able to do. Sometimes they don't have to walk down to that media center or have a teacher that reserves time in the library, a special block of time, when you could place things on hold and make reservations straight from home or at night for that book you really want to read. Also, it's increasing online discussions, collaborations between students and teachers using shared documents and things like Google Drive. And it's really created a level playing field with our home access and tablets that is really making a difference. And we're able to leverage the technology. I think we'll have our question and answer session coming up. And if I see any questions there, I'll definitely be responding in the chat room to those.
Great. Thank you so much. And those numbers are so powerful, especially with the number of books being checked out and seeing the difference of what's happening with your students and their seamless ability to get content and probably being more proactive about their learning potentially. Looks like. So thank you to you. And I've been scanning the chat questions and I'm going to try to kind of summarize a couple of questions into one. So there were mention in the chat from several schools or districts about their lack of funding and issues with funding. And both of you mentioned that you had grant funding for this access, both to the device as well as the 5 gigs, it looks like, of 4G out of school. So that's a great way to kickstart all of this. So my first question related to that and budget is, how have you planned kind of beyond the grant? I'm not sure how the terms of the grant, but how long the grant is and how you've started to plan to continue to provide such things once the grant may be complete.
So to be completely honest, that's probably one of the big elephant in the rooms that many are planning and discussion meetings. It is the one thing that keeps me up at night. It used to be the fear of breakage and theft, and now it's, okay, how do we continue this? Because all good things in ways of funding usually have an expiration date of some sort. So we're currently looking at our Title I budgets, our federal funding, and other options for our grant funds to be replaced. We're very fortunate as a Connect Ed school to have the support of our grant that way. Our local provider, we have had some recent contact with alternate providers in our area who do offer a significantly low cost access to families, some as little as $5 or $10 a month. And so, and then with some potential donors and community partners who have agreed to absorb some of those costs for families who may not even be able to do that. And so we are now beginning our next 12 to 18 months of our next steps for sustainability and how we will keep these, the equity and the access going at a sufficient rate. So I wish I had a hard and fast plan for you. We are facing the same questions that you all are with how do we continue this, providing this kind of robust content and to our students and our families? And the answer is there's no answer. There's no straightforward answer for everyone. And unfortunately, that's the reality that we live in. So I'm also looking for that information from you all. I mean, how do we keep this going for our students? Clearly, the data in that we've all shared points to equity and access being a key to academic success for students in the 21st century. So there's got to be some answers in there. There's got to be some reprioritizing of state and local funding to support technology in schools, and then just getting out there and beating the trees down till we make it happen for our kids.
Yep. What about from the Pickens School District? Where have you made plans?
That's one of the things that also keeps us up at night and concerned, because we've seen such benefits with our students having access. It just really has leveled a playing field for our students and for families. I know Dr. Corey didn't say this, but we have on occasion had students come into his school and say, I don't have my tablet because my mom needed it to finish her GED. Yes. Or she needed it to do a job application. Mm-hmm. And we're like, we really need you to bring that to school. Your mom needs to do that at night. But we know that that's a true need in our community. So we're doing, very similar things here, looking at the partnerships we can have in our community. We also are looking at redesigning our network to where we're trying to work with some rural electric co-ops and some other people who have fiber who are willing to, potentially invest into some public hotspots throughout the community. And our goal is over the next, 2 to 5 years to have a lot more hotspots available, which for us in a rural community, 504 square miles of rural mountain community on bedrock is not an easy thing. But we believe that there's, a lot of potential working with faith-based organizations, other community organizations. We have a very, very strong community here. And we always say one of the best parts of Pickens County is just our people. And we have partnerships with United Way, with the YMCA. We're looking at ways that we can get internet on our buses. And this is really a first step. One of the things we're hoping is that once parents are used to having this access, that they will in turn ask legislators and community members and others to fund it and to continue it, because they won't want to lose it. So it definitely is a concern. We realize we're very fortunate to have this grant. So we've got to work together. I really think across this country, we've got to invest in the infrastructure that not only gives us better quality internet access at school, which is also in need in our country, but also at for home as well.
Well, that's really helpful. And I know that some places, based on CETA's other work within digital instructional materials, there's been some shifts in those budgets as well, to shift from the classic traditional textbook and put the funding into both. The different states have the flexibility even for the device side of things, or at minimum the digital content. Mm-hmm. Of course, that is not always, there are costs to all of this, because dynamic digital content is expensive to develop and then also costly. So that's really helpful. I'm also going to ask, and this also kind of brings together a couple of questions. So you mentioned, Rhonda mentioned, Dr. Schroeder, I should say, mentioned the need for the students that potentially went over on their 5 G's for that month. And as the mother of a middle schooler who rides the bus for 45 minutes in the afternoon, we have constant family negotiations on what you need versus what you would like. Right. So I wondered, that kind of leads me to the fact that obviously, especially middle school students are very active in social media, and those are heavy bandwidth intensive activities. There were several questions in here about student data privacy, access to various sites. So what are you doing as far as digital literacy and potentially supporting and ensuring that on your school issued devices, that student data privacy and the content they're accessing is educationally appropriate?
Yeah, good question. And obviously in an elementary school, those concerns are even further compounded. We do get a lot of concerns from parents as, you know, how are we protecting this and what are we doing with it? So there are multiple tiers of things. The first of all starts with making sure the actual physical boundaries are in place, the geo boundaries. Our district provides an incredible software filtering and access filtering ability for us. And then, of course, within the device itself connected through our provider, there's a multi-layer plan for filtering of content. And in fact, when a student accesses the internet from their school device, whether it's at home or in the community where they're at, it bounces back to our filtering, and they get the actual same kind of filtering that they would if they were actually sitting here in the building with us.
Oh, okay.
So that's added a little extra layer of peace of mind for students and for parents. And then, you know, on the educational side of things, we purposely set out to include digital citizenship as a major, major, major part of our initiative. It spearheads every year with our parent information nights. We require all of our teachers to go through the Common Sense Media digital citizenship curriculum during the first 9 weeks of every school year, and then continue those lessons periodically throughout the school year. They're documented in their lesson plans. And so we follow through consistently with that message of digital citizenship, so that when a student, and I should say they all, it's not if, it's when a student does somehow, some way, miraculously get through one of our filters or one of the things they shouldn't be in, there becomes that question of responsible use. Do you understand what the expectations are? And so that has just been an ongoing conversation. And for us, we believe it's a paramount thing in elementary school, almost as critical as any other content area, so that they're growing with those boundaries and expectations. So the combination of the digital citizenship as a very primary focus with the actual security of our filtering programs as well.
And then, let me add to that very quickly. We do the same things, but we also, with our internet filtering, we use Securely, and they have a parent portal feature where parents receive an email every week of what their kids are doing, what websites they access on our take-it-home devices after school hours. And coming this fall, the parents will be able to go in and further restrict what we use, and also hit a stop button, set a timer on when they are and aren't allowed to access it. So we're trying to do everything in our power to bring parents along as partners, so that they have some element of control over the devices as well and don't feel like that we're intruding on their family life or their values with the devices.
That's great and really helpful. And that's probably a whole other webinar, right?
Right.
This issue. So we look forward to the continued conversations. And I guess it's good when we run out of time. Unfortunately, we didn't address everything that folks asked. However, we do have our online community, and I'll post that link in just a moment. I want to take a moment to thank all of the panelists. They took the time to prepare, rehearse, present today, and take time out of their busy schedules. So we do appreciate this. We like to highlight, you know, the great things that are going on around the country. So some of these recommendations and policy level things that state leaders work on, we see the impact down to the school level. And those are always inspiring, especially when you see the numbers of books being accessed and your change and achievement. It's just empowering. I would like to thank AT&T for their sponsorship of this particular event and their support of CETA and the Broadband Imperative 2. We couldn't do this, as folks mentioned. Everything happens with funding specifically. You can learn more about their resources at att.com/edu.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.